This is a HeadGum Original.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
I would say you're someone who has become one of my closest friends.
Likewise.
We talk on the phone 2 or 3 times a week, maybe.
I feel like it's been different under the pandemic just because time feels different.
Right. But we usually do a podcast.
J.D. Amato is a director, writer, producer, and occasionally a performer. We became friends just over a decade ago when we were both taking improv classes in New York City. He and I have done a number of strange projects together over the years, including a podcast called 12-Hour Day with J.D. and Connor, where every episode is a single, unedited 12-hour conversation between the two of us.
The sort of thing I always say is there's an episode where Connor and I start in New York and fly to Colorado and continue doing the episode throughout that entire process. We go through the airport, we're on the plane, we go to Colorado, and while we're on the plane, both Connor and I fell asleep for about 2 to 3 hours. And so in that episode of the podcast, there's about 2 to 3 hours of ambient airplane noise where Connor and I are just asleep.
I'm going to take a nap right now.
Okay, Connor's taking a nap.
All right, I'm calling it.
Good night, listeners.
I'm going to try to keep the microphone close to my mouth so that at least you get some breathing.
And there's some people who say that that's their favorite episode to listen to when they go to sleep because it's comforting to know that Connor and I are also asleep.
JD was the showrunner for the long-running cult TV series The Chris Gethard Show. I did various comedy bits on it over the years, and when it moved from public access to basic cable, I became its warm-up entertainer while also occasionally performing on the show itself.
And I remember one of the first times that we had you do warm-up. We're like, okay, Connor's going to be out there for 15 minutes and do warm-up. And then something went wrong, and I think you had to do warm-up for like an hour and a half or something. It was like insane.
I think that might have been the first episode.
Yeah, and I think that turned into like the Rosetta Stone where you're like, oh, I had all of these things planned, and I ran out of them after 10 minutes, but I still had 48 minutes of time left to fill. And you just having this look on your face like, well, all of my years of improv training, all of my years of watching TV and going to shows and interacting with audiences are now going to come and play in this very instance. That's a palpable memory.
Something that immediately became clear to JD and me was that working on the same weekly cable TV show didn't mean we'd be spending more time together. Usually whenever I was around, I was focused on the studio audience, while JD was off in the control room dealing with big picture stuff. Which is why I have such a vivid memory of one of the rare occasions when JD called me into his office to tell me, there's a thing that might be happening.
In terms of people watching the show's numbers were abysmal. And so in TV, obviously, is a business. The network wants the show to make them money in some way. One thing that was floated to us as a way to build value for the network was most TV shows don't want to do product integrations because they feel like it's like selling out. And we were sort of laughing, saying, I mean, we'll do that because we'll find a way to do it where it doesn't feel like selling out, where it feels like funny and sort of self-aware. We weren't pressured into it, but we were sort of told, this is a way to increase the value of this show. And right now, your show doesn't have a lot of things that are of palpable value to the business side of this network.
There was a big marketing meeting where various products and companies were pitched. People who might be interested in working with the show on some kind of promotion. And the most promising of these was Kentucky Fried Chicken. The Gethard Show, in case you're not familiar, was not a place where anybody would have expected to see a KFC ad. It was a show where the audience would be asked to destroy the set on live TV, or guess what's in the big dumpster, or where the cast would stage a quasi-demonic ritual live on air. So when they settled on KFC, the writers started tossing around a bunch of ideas that fit the show, including Chris bringing his entire audience to eat at the KFC in his hometown in New Jersey, or that an actor playing KFC's founder and spokesperson Colonel Sanders could appear and deliver chicken to the studio. But the idea they landed on involved something from my recent past, an advertising campaign that had reinvigorated the KFC brand while leaving a trail of disappointed actors in its wake, including me.
And so I remember on the call, both Chris and I knew your story, and it came up as, you know, we do have a cast member that auditioned to be the Colonel. I think that was like idea one in the meeting was, let's get Connor to do this.
This is Dead Eyes, a podcast about one actor's quest to find out why Tom Hanks fired him from a small role in the 2001 HBO miniseries Band of Brothers.
My name is Connor Ratliff. I'm an actor and comedian. 15 years after being fired by Tom Hanks, I auditioned for the role of Colonel Sanders and was rejected. 2 years later, I was given a second chance.
The good news is that that bit did save the show, and the show went on forever and is still going on to this day. Oh no, it got canceled soon after, so oh well.
And that's the short version. I want to be clear about one thing right up top, because KFC is going to keep coming up throughout this episode. This is not branded content. Nobody paid us for this. We actually offered KFC the chance to buy a commercial, and they said they didn't think our listeners were the KFC type. And you know what? They might be right. So to start, what you need to know is that in the year 2015, I auditioned to be Colonel Sanders, the official face of KFC, in a brand new ad campaign. It was a pretty intense audition process, which you'll hear about in a little bit, and ultimately, I did not get the part. But 2.5 years later, the Gethard Show writers who knew the story had the idea to recreate that unsuccessful audition for their KFC product integration.
But we also all felt that there's no way KFC's going to let us do this, because it admits a level of fallibility to a negative audition experience.
Right.
So we pitched the idea. KFC picks, agrees that you re-auditioning for the Colonel is a fun idea.
KFC approved the sketch, gave a little bit of feedback as it was being written, and before long, I was on live television in full Colonel Sanders hair, makeup, and costume, presenting a bizarro version of how my 2015 audition supposedly went.
Hi, I'm Connor Ratliff, and I'm reading for the role of Colonel Sanders.
So you swivel around, get into character, and when you turn around, your audition is this like bombastic, dramatic, intense characterization of the Colonel.
Well, 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 gentlemen. For years, you have been trying to get my secret recipe of 11 herbs and spices. You have tracked me like a dog, hunted me like a fowl, and I would rather die than give up what is mine!
Okay, Connor!
You know, we do the sketch thing where it stops and you make adjustments and each one is ridiculous, and you're doing this, like, Oscar-worthy performance that in no way resembles the KFC Colonel as we see him in commercials.
Yeah.
And instead, it's like this, like, troubling, aggressive Southern character.
Mary Beth, kiss me again. One kiss for each of the 11 herbs and spices. One. Two. Oh. Three. Ooh. Connor.
I mentioned that KFC had given a little bit of feedback. Obviously, you can hear that they were fine with me playing Colonel Sanders as a kind of intense weirdo. After all, this is me playing a rejected colonel, not an approved one. But still, they did draw the line at a few of the more outrageous ideas that we try to get away with.
The third note is my favorite note. Remove the mention of cholera.
Yeah, there was a dramatic monologue where it was like the colonel was like at the deathbed of the woman he loves or something.
And, oh, and right. It was like
she was dying of cholera.
Yeah.
And... I mean, that's an easy note, and I agree. Yeah, let's remove the mention of cholera. It doesn't serve the product.
The day after the broadcast, the trade publication Adweek ran an article revealing that it had all been a paid advertisement. And based on the feedback I saw at the time among the Gethard Show fans on social media, a lot of them were surprised when they found out it was a real commercial. Most of them just thought it was a typically weird Gethard Show character bit, like phone sex Chewbacca or weenie feet Bobbins.
And it fit in with something that would have been a Connor Ratliff bit on our show regardless.
Yeah.
Now, if it wasn't KFC, the wife would have been dying of cholera and we would have name-dropped Daryl Hammond. But it was a success in that I don't think creatively it was in disconcert with our show.
Now, you might have just heard JD's mention of the name Daryl Hammond, comedian, impressionist, Saturday Night Live alumnus. Or more specifically, you heard JD highlight the fact that I did not mention Daryl during my KFC bit.
No, you can't do this, Chris. Don't cut me off, okay? This is what happened in the actual audition, okay? And this is true. I was in the room when I heard them say, "This guy's pretty good, but I bet we can get someone famous."
In reality, I didn't hear them say, "We can get someone famous." I heard someone in the room say, "Does anyone know what Daryl Hammond is doing?" Right as I was leaving the room after my audition. And I thought to myself, damn it, that's a good idea. And I knew in that moment that it was over. I knew that I had lost the role to Daryl.
Howdy, folks, it's me, Colonel Sanders. I've been gone for a while, and boy, howdy, have things changed.
2 months after my KFC audition, Daryl Hammond was announced as the new Colonel Sanders, with great fanfare.
I'm Colonel Sanders, and I'm back, America.
I'm back, America. It's still finger-licking.
If you're thinking that this episode is going to be solving the mystery of why KFC hired Daryl Hammond instead of me, let's go ahead and clear that one up right now. Daryl was a cast member on Saturday Night Live for 14 seasons and is renowned for doing pitch-perfect impressions of famous people. And I am me. Mystery solved. No, what I really wanted to find out about was what happened next. Because it wasn't happily ever after for Daryl Hammond and KFC. And I wanted to connect the dots between his successful debut as the Colonel and me, 2 years later, appearing on TV as the rejected Colonel. Because I wasn't the only rejected Colonel. The truth is that the entire campaign ultimately became a parade of rejected Colonels, one after another. But before we get to that, let's go back to a happier moment. At the beginning of the campaign, in 2015, when Daryl first became the Colonel.
Well, first of all, Kevin, thank you so much for talking to me for this. I love the painting you have in the background there.
We got colonels everywhere here. We're colonel obsessed.
This is Kevin Hochman, the current president of KFC in the United States. Before he held that position, he was their chief marketing officer. From this point on, we will refer to him as KFC Kevin.
Yeah, I remember the first day we shot. We were in Anaheim Stadium, and I remember him coming out on a golf cart. It was like, I don't know, 7 or 8 in the morning. And he sounded just like him, and he kind of had his mannerisms, and I guess he had studied him. And I remember everybody kind of just stopped talking or whatever they were, you know, eating, you know, at the breakfast burrito stand or whatever. And everybody just kind of stopped and was like, oh my goodness, the Colonel's back.
This new iteration of the Colonel was the brainchild of ad agency Wyden and Kennedy, aiming to revitalize the brand through a range of unorthodox ideas. One of these involved the Colonel being reincarnated as a chicken.
The Colonel came back actually as a walking and living chicken that was dressed like the Colonel.
That's a complicated one.
That's a complicated one. That's why we didn't buy it. But
that draws on all kinds of questions of karma and...
Oh, yeah. It was definitely... Maybe we could do that 5 years from now, but we couldn't do it 7 years ago.
It might raise too many philosophical questions, I think, for an ad campaign.
That's what we thought, too.
Another pitch envisioned actor Paul Dano as a character they referred to as Colonel Paul.
Remember in Star Wars when Obi-Wan Kenobi, you know, appears in the mind of young Luke Skywalker and he's like, telling him how to like become a Jedi, and Luke Skywalker's kind of hesitant. He's like, I don't really want to do this, and eventually, you know, finds his confidence. It was the same idea. It was like the colonel had passed.
Oh, so he's like a force ghost.
Yes, but he had found Colonel Paul to take his place, and Colonel Paul was like a reluctant millennial that did not want to be the colonel. So like, it was pretty funny, and I think one day we might make something like a, you know, a Colonel Paul.
I was gonna say, I think that idea is evergreen. I don't think that's a blown idea.
When I asked Kevin if he knew anything about how close I had come to being cast as the Colonel, he told me he wasn't involved in that phase of casting, or much of the creative element at all.
I have no idea. You know, they're very smart in sheltering me from that. I'm what's known as the client.
So you don't see it until it's like with the president, where by the time it gets to your desk, they've already answered as many of the questions as they can answer.
Yeah, and you have to trust them. And we pay them millions of dollars to represent us and to create these, you know, incredible, you know, TV ads or print ads or whatever. They don't want me, and they shouldn't want me, to try to insert myself in that process because I'm not a world-class creative person. I do remember there was debate whether it should be someone that like people know and have seen before, or it should be somebody that could just really do an amazing job acting. Like, we did talk about that.
Yeah.
And part of this is like who you want, and part of this is who's available and who is affordable within a, you know, a budget. And
I would have been very affordable.
I'm trying to remember if I remember your performance. I was asking Katie. I was like, "We got to find those casting tapes because I'm sure I saw them."
Kevin put me in touch with Eric Baldwin, who up until recently was the executive creative director at Wieden & Kennedy.
That would be a true treasure if you were able to find any of those.
Yeah, we should look and see if we can. Sometimes we save them. Like, I remember casting Isaiah Mustafa for Old Spice. Like, we saved his audition tape for a while, so it's somewhere. It's probably somewhere around here, but we'll find it. But yeah, at that moment, you know, when we first started working with...
Eric is one of the people responsible for the iconic Old Spice campaign, commonly referred to as the man your man could smell like. And he was involved from the very beginning of the modern reinvention of Colonel Sanders, working on the campaign from 2015 to 2018. And instead of the wilder ideas you heard earlier, they decided to go a more traditional route.
When we first started, you know, we wanted to bring the Colonel back and have him be more front and center. Just because the brand was at its best when he was there. And we thought it might be cool if we kind of tried to bring it back in an old-fashioned way and be very earnest about who this colonel is and try to make this person, you know, with prosthetics and, you know, the whole goal was to make them look like Colonel Sanders and have them embody the colonel. And as we started doing the casting, we felt like there was just something missing. Is this the right way to go? Should we really be going with trying to make this person feel like a Colonel doppelganger? We'd listened to all these audio recordings of the Colonel. So we had this kind of voice and cadence in our head about the way the Colonel would speak.
And we've got a lot of responsibility is to try to leave the world better than we found it for the children as they grow up.
And we really wanted something that mirrored that almost exactly. It felt like we needed that sort of almost like an impressionist. Like, we're like, we're just not quite there with that voice. And somebody had suggested Daryl.
This was the moment I overheard at my callback audition. It was a packed room with executives calling in remotely, so I have no idea if it was someone in the room or someone on a monitor.
It felt as if I was witnessing the idea occurring to someone in that very first moment.
That's kind of how it happened. Somebody was like, "What about Daryl Hammond?"
Yeah, it might have even been you, for all I know. It could have been. I just know, I remember hearing that sentence and in that moment realizing, oh, this may be taking a turn away from me. It was sort of that thing where you get to the bus stop and you see the bus pull away and you're like, oh, no, I understand.
Daryl was in San Diego at the time, performing his autobiographical one-man show, The Daryl Hammond Project, at the La Jolla Playhouse. He got the call and read for the part over the phone.
We were just blown away. He, like, you know, he sounded exactly like the Colonel. And so that was really the deal breaker. When we heard his voice, we thought, oh my gosh, like, this guy, he truly is the Colonel.
Howdy, folks, it's me.
But he wouldn't be for long.
Hey, that's not the real Colonel Sanders. I'm the real Colonel Sanders.
When we return, the campaign makes a big decision to change colonels in midstream.
I think they probably always thought they might do this. They didn't tell me that because they don't want the client to worry.
Dead Eyes will be right back.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Chicken in the bucket, chicken in the beans, chicken in the bucket, chicken in the bean.
And if I could, I'd put chicken in the lemonade.
It's finger-licking good.
Daryl's debut as the Colonel was considered a success and had revitalized KFC's business. Sales were up and people were talking about it. The majority of the public response was positive, but there were a few complaints that caught KFC's attention. While some were upset about the Colonel being back in general, there was a subset of detractors who didn't like that he was an impersonation of the historical figure.
And so there was this big debate, was it proper or was it right that we brought back Colonel Sanders?
This is KFC Kevin again.
So 4 weeks into this, we had to shoot the next round of ads. And of course, you just stick with it, right? Because it's working. We like safe things that we know will work.
So at this point, KFC had a choice to make. They could stick with Daryl or lean into the criticism they were getting that he wasn't the real Colonel after all.
They're like, we're going to just take the wind out of their sails. So the idea of like going meta on the advertising and kind of making fun of conventional advertising, we thought was really a sharp way in, especially for young people that don't like to be sold to.
If you've seen any KFC commercials over the past 6 years, you're probably aware of the ongoing conceit that they feature a revolving door of different performers and celebrities playing the role of Colonel Sanders. This is Eric from Wieden and Kennedy again.
And so it was kind of a relief to have that get out of jail free card to where you can keep yourself from getting bored and keep consumers from getting bored by being able to just say like, oh, you thought he was this guy? No, he's this guy now.
The first thing I said is, what are you guys freaking crazy? We're not going to move off of this. And it ended up being way more successful than the first round of ads. You know, the whole thing just took off as rotating colonels, right? The rest was history.
Howdy, folks. It's me, the real Colonel Sanders. I'm back to tell you about my new...
3 months after Daryl made his debut as the Colonel, he was replaced by fellow SNL alum Norm Macdonald. KFC put out a statement insisting that Daryl was not fired, that the reason for the change was that, quote, Colonel Sanders was a very enigmatic personality. Not just one person could play him. We reached out to Daryl a couple of times, and he declined to talk to us. But he's made his feelings about the experience clear. But
ever since the Colonel thing, you know.
Oh, my God, that's right. Right.
Back in 2016, he spoke about it on Greg Opie Hughes' satellite radio show, Opie Radio. Daryl and Jim Gaffigan, another celebrity colonel, were coincidentally booked as guests together on the same episode.
You were the first.
How do you like doing that? Who's replacing you?
I don't know. I think Cindy Crawford. I don't know.
This was still relatively early days for the campaign. They were only on Colonel Number 3. But Gaffigan wasn't far off when he joked about who could come next. Daryl seemed less amused. He felt sucker punched by how short his tenure as the colonel ended up being.
That was the weirdest thing. I mean, they built me up to do that, and now five other people are going to do it. And I'm like, you could have told me that. I mean, I still would have done the job, but right. It'd be nice, you know, that I didn't spend time with the Sanders family.
Right.
You know, and get me all into this.
Oh, you did spend time with
them? Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Daryl mentions that KFC sent him books about the colonel, took him on a tour of his original office. They really made him feel like it was a big deal.
You know, I'm at Anaheim Stadium. They come up, they have tears in their eyes, and you brought, you know, he's alive again kind of, you know, thing. And you should just tell me, like, you know, this is an assembly line. Yeah. This is capitalism.
Right.
This is Americana. Next.
That's why they're...
Everything Daryl's saying lines up with the information I was given back when I was auditioning for the role. There was no indication that this campaign was originally designed to feature an ever-changing colonel played by multiple people.
You're a little bothered by this. A little bit.
I am.
Yeah.
Betrayed.
There's a spirit of improv to the way the campaign unfolded, yes-anding the critics who said Daryl wasn't really the colonel by agreeing with them and making what they said retroactively true. But this wasn't the first point that KFC infused improv into their approach. When I auditioned in February of 2015, they had me do a lot of improvising and going off script. Now, that's not unusual by itself. There's often a certain amount of improv in commercial auditions. You might remember that from last episode. But this was a lot. Whole monologues, even songs. It really felt to me like they were looking for someone who could generate additional funny material. Someone with an improv background. But when Daryl Hammond's commercials began to air a few months after I lost the part, almost every line was familiar to me from the pre-written ad copy I had auditioned with. These were the Wyden and Kennedy scripts, word for word. I didn't notice a lot of improv.
You know, I think we wrongly thought that Daryl was a could do improv, you know, and I think we got excited about the idea he was available. And what ended up happening was, you know, we realized it was more sketch comedy and you needed to feed him things. And he came up with some things, you know, but he was a little bit more nervous to do that. It was more like, oh, we're the improv people now. Like, we have to help him with that. That's not necessarily his skill set. That's not to take anything away from Daryl. I mean, he's an amazing talent.
I totally get why someone at KFC or an ad agency might assume that every comedian on SNL has a background in every type of comedy. But there are stand-ups who've never done improv and improvisers who can't do impressions. In some circles, not having a background in improv is a badge of honor. KFC thought they'd hired an improviser for a loosey-goosey, anything-can-happen approach to their campaign. Instead, what they had done was hire a world-class sketch actor and impressionist who could deliver them a perfectly accurate new version of Colonel Sanders. But they weren't looking for accuracy anymore.
I'm here to prove once and for all that I am the real Colonel Sanders.
Norm MacDonald replaced Daryl, and then he was quickly replaced by comedian Jim Gaffigan.
It's finger licking good!
Then George Hamilton.
It's me, the extra crispy Colonel.
WWE wrestler Dolph Ziggler.
It's finger little good.
Rob Riggle.
It's finger licking good!
Billy Zane.
It's finger licking gold.
Rob Lowe.
We will lick our fingers good!
Ray Liotta.
Howdy, folks. I'm here to tell you about KFC's Honey Mustard Barbecue, Georgia Gold.
So by the time I was getting ready to appear on live television as the rejected colonel, a thought occurred to me. Maybe at some point, KFC will want to take a break from celebrity colonels and do an ad where the whole point is that the new colonel isn't someone famous. And if that were to happen, who better than I, their rejected non-celebrity colonel? To me, it seemed like destiny. And then, a month and a half later, KFC did exactly that spot. And it was not me.
Howdy, folks. I am the value colonel. I'm not spending money on actors and fancy celebrities, so I can fit all this.
KFC's value colonel made his debut in December of 2017 with the actor Christopher Boyer in the role. You might recognize him as General Robert E. Lee in Steven Spielberg's film Lincoln. He was also, as it turns out, one of the people who had auditioned for Colonel Sanders at the same time I did, back before the whole idea of celebrity colonels had even been hatched.
And at that time, the campaign was they were going to play it straight.
This is Christopher, or Boyer as he prefers to go by.
I researched the videos of footage of Harlan. I had a seersucker suit already and a string tie already, and I had the bigger beard. But I went in, and then I had a callback, and then I was put on a veil.
On a veil is a term that means a casting director or producer is officially reserving your availability to play a role on a specified date or series of dates. They're basically calling dibs on your time.
Or unless you book a job and tell them to fuck off, I already got something. And then I get a call from a buddy of mine who's on the production end of the campaign. And he says, Boyer, I just saw your picture on the wall at the production offices next to this other picture of a guy with dead eyes. I think you're going to get it.
No way. No way. No, no way. No, 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 I've been burned. I've been burned before. I do not fall for stories that are too good to be true. You will not get me.
Sorry.
You hear that, everybody? You will not come to my podcast and prank me. I will not be pranked.
Yeah. Anyway, all but that part is true. He says, don't tell anybody I told you this, but it looks like you're the man. And so I'm all, you know, I'm like, oh, fuck. You know, I've been in the business for 28 years in L.A., so close to so many big commercial campaigns and so many good roles that went to, you know, name actors. And I'm just thinking, this is my time, finally. You know, the dues are going to pay off. I'm going to get this thing.
Yeah.
One day later, he calls me back. I got some bad news for you, man. I said, what? Is everybody all right? You know, because I knew his wife and his family. I said, Jesus, is everybody okay? He says, no, it's you. I said, what? But he said, they're redoing the entire concept. You know, just keep this between you and me, but they're going with a celebrity. He didn't tell me who it was. And then out rolls 2 years of, you know, first Daryl Hammond and then a, you know, a plethora of other big names.
2 years later, Boyer got the chance to audition for The Value Colonel. He made the wise decision not to mention that he had previously been rejected until they had already booked him for the role.
And the day I got the call from my agent, I looked at my horoscope. You ready for this?
Okay,
I took I took a picture of the horoscope. You're slow to bring yourself to believe in all that's going on today. You've been burned before by buying in too early. So the LA Times had it right.
Boyer filmed 3 ads as the colonel, and KFC hyped him up in the press, even using his rejection from the first campaign as a talking point.
He's so budget, he even auditioned for it once, and we didn't even remember him.
I even remember at the time thinking that this could mark the end of the celebrity colonels. Maybe they had reached a point where they had come full circle, back to the way the campaign was originally envisioned, with one actor taking over the role. Maybe the value colonel was here to stay. Unsurprisingly, Boyer also entertained a similar line of thinking.
My whole point of going to L.A. was just to get a nest egg, come back home to Bohunk, Western Maryland, and buy myself a little farm.
Yeah.
And raise heritage pigs. For the price of a house in L.A., you could buy a farm here that's massive. And I'm thinking, shit, Lord, if this just give me a year, just a year at this, and I know I'll have enough money to get out of debt. And go back home with maybe $250,000. You know, not unheard of with a campaign. I'll buy my 20 acres and hang it up, you know?
Yeah.
So I go back to L.A. I'm sitting in my house, and I get a phone call from my buddy who happens to be my landlord. Boy, the kids are going to college. You got to sell the house.
Oh.
Okay. That's all right, because I'm the KFC colonel. So maybe this is a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, maybe this is the universe working for the first time, you know, in conjunction with the things that are happening with my life. There was no panic until I'm sitting in my living room one evening and I see Reba McEntire as the new colonel. And, I mean, you talk about just the bottom falling out. Oh, oh my God. 31 days. That's how long I had as the value colonel. 31 days.
KFC moved on to Reba. They moved on to Jason Alexander. They even moved on to Hafþór Júlíus Björnsson, who played the Mountain on Game of Thrones. But when they needed to promote a limited-time chicken and waffles product, KFC felt the ad they were planning was flashy enough that a celebrity colonel wasn't needed. Once again, they didn't call me. But they didn't call Boyer either.
Please don't tell me that you auditioned for the spot that I got.
No, not that one in particular, but in 2015... For this round, they cast Craig Fleming, a writer, educator, and former Disney Imagineer. He'd been pursuing acting full-time for 4 years prior to his booking the spot with KFC. The audition brief said to dress like the colonel. Craig opted to wear jeans and found himself up against 9 other dead ringers decked out in full colonel regalia for the callbacks. His audition included acting out what he'd be doing in the commercials, which entailed dancing with a human-sized syrup bottle to the song I've Had the Time of My Life from the 1987 film Dirty Dancing, with the colonel in the Patrick Swayze role. After all that, Craig finally got the call from his agents, who told him the magic words.
You're on avail. We're going to do a criminal background check over the weekend.
Very wise. Very wise.
Yeah, absolutely. For international brand icons, you got it.
Yeah, they just got it. You don't want to get a Colonel Sanders and find out they got a history, you know?
Yeah, any history. I have no history.
A dark past, yeah.
It's all been erased.
Clearly you passed. And what was the next phase? When did you then find out you had it?
They did it over the weekend. Monday, my agent called me at the end of a very long day for me of waiting. And he said, sit down, you know, you're Colonel Sanders.
Did you have a process for how you created your version of the Colonel, or was it just trying to figure out what they wanted from you?
You know, it's weird. My very first job was at Disneyland in the walk-around characters. And there's a really strange dissociation that happens when you're playing something that people look at it and immediately it deflects their attention to something else. You're acting inside, but they can't see it. And so they're looking at you as the character, but they're not seeing you. They're seeing this thing. But this thing isn't really what they're looking at or for or dreaming of. It's something else. There's another transference, too. And so that was going through my head as the colonel. I was overthinking that. And then I saw, all I have to do is remember the choreography.
Hit your marks.
Hit your marks. Don't get a concussion when the giant bottle headbutts you halfway through the shoot.
Craig shot 4 ads in 2 days. The first day was dancing with Mrs. Butterworth. The second featured a group of Christmas carolers for ads time for the holiday season. Craig was aware that this incarnation of the character was attached to a specific limited-time-only product, but he was hoping that if they ever brought back Kentucky Fried Chicken and Waffles, he would get to come back too.
And then, I think, 3 months later, I got a call from my agent's assistant who said, hey, Whedon and Kennedy want to know if you're available for a KFC campaign in the middle of May. And I said, yeah, I am. And then nothing.
The procession of celebrity colonels resumed, with actors Peter Weller and Sean Astin each reprising their iconic film roles to play, respectively, RoboCop and Rudy versions of Colonel Sanders. But when Chicken and Waffles finally returned to KFC, so did Craig. The ad was a parody of another Patrick Swayze film, Ghost, basically making Craig KFC's stand-in for the late actor, their value Swayze, proving it is possible for a past colonel to return. So in this phase of your life and your career, is it acting all the way, or what is your current situation?
I wanted it to be acting all the way, and, you know, and I kind of thought after the colonel that some things, you know, there'd be a little kind of, you know, bump or something, and there was not, which was, you know. But I started to get called in for some episodics and stuff, and by the way, the colonel gig was my first SAG gig, and then there's been nothing since.
And just in case there are any longtime listeners out there starting to think, wow, this podcast has really started to veer off course from its original premise, here is a completely organic celebrity cameo to remind us that eventually all roads lead back to the man who started it all.
When I was working for Imagineering, which is based in Glendale, I used to go over to the lot, and I ran into Tom Hanks. I mean, I literally ran into Tom Hanks. I was late getting back to my office. I'd been just kind of screwing around on the lot, and came around a corner and I just plowed right into him and didn't, you know, I'm a slight guy, I guess, and it didn't seem to push him back at all. And he did a, it was pre-Woody, but he did kind of Woody thing, you know, hold on there, partner. And then I moved on.
I ask that question a lot. Have you ever crossed paths with Tom Hanks? And this is the first time where it's a literal physical encounter, where it is just that your paths collided and that was it.
Yeah, so it wasn't crossing. I mean, it was, but you know.
It was a direct hit.
Yes, Hadron Collider or whatever.
You don't get closer than that to Tom Hanks. You bumped right into him.
No, you really, you shouldn't without having met him first.
I'm struck by how much disappointment the Colonel Sanders campaign has inflicted upon the actors involved in it. And I only talked to a few of them. Who knows how many other disappointed colonels there are in the world? Maybe because the central gag is based on the idea that all actors are disposable and easily replaced.
You're making me feel bad, I'm sorry.
No.
Eric from Wieden & Kennedy again.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. Even Daryl, you know, I think he was frustrated with us kind of afterwards, that he thought he was in this for the, you know, that we were going to do this with him moving down the line. And we never really gave him any indication that's what we were doing. We did tell him that this is a campaign that we intend to, you know, have going on, but, you know, and I think
it's a fun campaign. And I understand the impulse to want to forget about any hurt feelings along the way, but it does seem like everybody has a different recollection of how it all went down.
I think once people start doing it, they're like, this is fun. I knew Daryl and Norm really wanted to keep going, but I didn't know there were other folks out there feeling that way too. Connor, I'm looking at pictures, and I'm looking at your IMDb picture, and I think I do remember you being in the very finals. Like, I think I remember seeing your casting tape and us being like, he's really good. Are we sure we want to do this? Like, that kind of like having that, like, should we get a celebrity? Is this not going to go over? Like, just that anxiety around it.
I'm fascinated if you're able to look. If my auditions exist in some folder in some drive somewhere.
Yeah, let us see if we can dig them up.
There was one more thing I was curious about after hearing Eric and KFC Kevin go into such detail about each phase of the campaign. I wanted to know what they thought of my performance as the rejected colonel on The Gethard Show. Where would they rank me in the pantheon of colonels?
It's vaguely familiar to me, but I think it might have been after my time on as a CD on the brand.
KFC Kevin had never even heard about it.
I can't believe I didn't know about that. I usually know about everything these guys do.
You know what? It's on brand for me that even you wouldn't be aware of the level of colonel that I rose to.
By the way, when you become the colonel, we call it donning the white suit. That's our vernacular internally.
So that was retroactively demoralizing to know that I had donned the white suit, and it was as if it had never even happened, which I suppose is fitting for a Colonel Sanders that never quite made the cut. Perhaps, if we're being totally honest, these things are meant to be forgotten. Rejected, discarded, audition videos deleted or thrown in the trash. Maybe that's the way it's supposed to go.
We did just find the audition tape.
Oh, play it, share it.
Or, goddammit, maybe not.
All right, here we go, here you are.
Hey, folks, it's me, Colonel Sanders, with a summer baseball game time eating idea for you. Light a bucket of my original recipe pinch hit for your smelly old hot dogs. Because if there are two things I'm certain of, it's that one, my original recipe fried chicken tastes great when you're watching baseball. And two, the baseball will always be America's number one sport, free from corruption, scandal, or cheating of any kind. And the players will always make what we all consider is a reasonable and fair salary. Strike three. You're hungry for my summer meal featuring my original recipe chicken. It's still finger looking good.
Wow.
Oh.
Wow.
So you were in the final five.
The final five.
Yeah.
Boyer was in there, I assume, in that final five.
It's funny because I don't remember Boyer. Like, you looked familiar to me as soon as you came on.
Yeah.
But Boyer never, no, it's let's see, who are these dudes?
This is going to sound like I'm making excuses, but I swear that I was way more impressive during the improvised portions of my auditions. The monologues, the songs. None of that apparently survived on tape. And I think that's the stuff that got me into KFC's top five. Because in the end, I look at that video and I think I would not have cast me as Colonel Sanders either. I'll post it on Twitter, but I don't think anybody's going to watch it and think, oh boy, they really missed out on an opportunity there. If I ever manage to track down my Band of Brothers audition tape, this podcast might just be me proving that I never deserved any of these roles to begin with. I had thought of this episode as a side story. Another small detour on the road to the truth behind my Private Zelensky firing. But that role was smaller than Colonel Sanders in almost every way. It was less money. It was less screen time. It was even a lower rank.
Okay, think about your experience with potentially being on Band of Brothers, right?
This is J.D. Amato again.
The character that you were going to play was going to be an under five, right? I think there you had two lines in the final script.
Yeah.
Right. So it was what, like $3,000, $5,000?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And then you get residuals,
mm-hmm.
but they wouldn't be huge residuals.
No.
Probably. But then what I think's interesting is if you got the Colonel, that would have been so much money.
Which is one of the things that was great about having evolved or developed as a person and an actor to the point where I don't take professional rejection that poorly anymore.
Right.
I remember being backstage at UCB, and I think I was talking to Brian McCann, and I think I had just lost out on the Colonel Sanders part.
Right.
But he threw out a number. He's like, oh, you just lost out on, and it, whether it was like $500,000 or $1 million or whatever it was such a long, it might as well have been $1 million for how it hit me in that second where I was like, oh, wow, like I might not have had to worry about money for a while. And I had like probably about a minute of thinking, ugh, and then I just put it out of my mind. I thought, well, it's just like all the other money I don't have. It's just like I didn't have money 10 minutes ago. I still don't have money. I'm doing fine.
Yeah, but I think that's what's so interesting. And I sort of wonder, being in the audition room for KFC and having the person whisper, what's Daryl Hammond doing? That theoretically had a greater impact between the outcomes of your future versus Tom Hanks saying you have dead eyes. Ultimately, from a material sense,
yeah,
it's a way bigger spectrum in KFC. And that should, to a lot of people, that would be a lot more hard to take, is that my life could have been different. I could have not had to worry about money. I could have had X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
But I know you. You don't think about the KFC thing like that. But you do think about this thing that is something about your core viscera, about who you are as a person. That's more impacting than the idea that you could have owned a home right now.
I mean, but because ultimately, Tom Hanks means more to me than fried chicken does.
So you just said, I care about what Tom Hanks thinks of me more than I care about KFC.
Yeah.
But what I'm proposing is that I think you care about what Tom Hanks thinks of you more than you care about $1 million.
Interesting. On some level, yeah. Like if somebody said to me, here's an envelope with $1 million in it, and here's an envelope that has a handwritten note from Tom Hanks describing in detail his memory of what happened back in 2000. In that circumstance, I would take the $1 million. But I would always be haunted by that. And when the money ran out, I would, on my deathbed, I'd be like, I wonder what was in that other envelope.
But then there's this world where there's two envelopes, right?
Yeah.
One envelope has $5,000 in it and Tom Hanks hand-selecting you to be part of Band of Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And the other envelope has $1 million in it and KFC hand-selecting you to be the Colonel.
But it doesn't bother me that I didn't become the colonel ultimately. It didn't work out.
There are people out there who may live their life on more financial terms.
Yeah.
And that idea of just missing out on $1 million would hurt them a lot more than anything else related to their creative growth. And of course, I think you're at a place where you look back on that experience of Band of Brothers and for a lot of reasons recognize that that failure at that time, though it may have felt like it set you back, you're happy with the person you are now. And so that's part of that journey. That was sort of a necessary part of that journey.
Yeah.
But it's just interesting.
Boy, when you go, you go 3,000 miles just so I know you never love me. You never love me. Then when you're gone, you're gone. I know the tumbleweed lexicon. You never love me. You never love me. 3,000 miles to sitting around with a vanishing groom. Like a hermit crab shell was a blank, you could tell it never was me. 'Cause you never loved me. You never loved me. Boy, when you're
Dead Eyes is a production of HeadGum Studios. It was created by me, Connor Ratliff. It's written by me, and it's mostly me that you hear talking, including now. The show is produced and edited by Harry Nelson and Mike Comite. Our associate producer is Jordan Allen, with production assistance from Megan Sarnacki. Special thanks to my guests, J.D. Amato, Kevin Hochman, Eric Baldwin, Christopher Boyer, and Craig Fleming, and Katie Hull at Wieden Kennedy, who managed to track down my KFC audition tape. Also, thanks to Amy Mann for letting us use this song that's playing in the background. It's called You Never Loved Me, and it can be found on her Grammy-winning 2017 album, Mental Illness. If you like Dead Eyes, please do all the things that podcasts tell you to do. Subscribe, rate, review, follow us on Twitter at Dead Eyes Podcast, and talk about us nicely on social media. If you want to reach out, the email is deadeyespodcast@gmail.com. Please tell your friends about this show, especially if you are friends with Tom Hanks, who is unlikely to ever portray Colonel Sanders. But he came pretty close with his performance as Professor Goldthwaite Higginson Dorr, Ph.D., in the Coen brothers' 2004 film The Lady Killers. It's almost the equivalent of that meme, tell me you're playing Colonel Sanders without telling me you're playing Colonel Sanders. I can't really think of any role that a major actor has taken on in the past 40 years that is anywhere near as close to being Colonel Sanders as that one is. Maybe Al Pacino in Scent of a Woman. Anyway, it's a great performance. Also, in next year's Elvis Presley biopic directed by Baz Luhrmann, Tom Hanks will be playing the role of Colonel Tom Parker, Elvis Presley's manager, who, like Colonel Sanders, was also an honorary colonel. Sanders was given the title by the governor of Kentucky, and Tom Parker was given his by the governor of Louisiana as a thank you for helping him get elected. Thanks for listening. Be smart. Stay safe.
Was a HeadGum original.